We are here at the 2017 REACH Conference, put on by the fine folks at the California Nevada Credit Union Leagues, and we are here with Mr. John Moreno from Meyer Chatfield Group. How are you, sir?
Very well. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. How's the show going for you so far?
It's a great conference. Always a great conference. All the leagues, all the associations put on a great session. A lot of education, a lot of current stuff, and of course, that's why we're here, of course, to talk about current things.
Indeed. Talking of current things, we have examination guide updates from the NCUA on deferred compensation and pre-funding investments. Provide us a couple of details. What's going on here, John?
Absolutely. So credit unions have been able to use what we call non-permissible or non-703 investments to fund benefit programs for quite some time, since I would say April of 2004. And we've continuously been looking for additional regulation or hearing rumors of additional regulation regarding those investments. And finally, this year, we got the update to the examiner's guide, which seems to treat that in a non-regulatory fashion. I think there's a little bit of regulation gridlock in D.C., and so this was the next best thing was to say, okay, let's update the examiners with how they should review these investments, these assets, what risks should they look for, and give us some guidelines on how that should work.
Okay. So. Makes sense. So who does this update, who does it affect? Who's the update affect?
The update's going to affect really two main constituencies. Number one is federally chartered, federally insured credit unions. So those are the ones that you assume it would affect.
Right.
The other group it does affect in a knock-on fashion is federally insured, state chartered credit unions. For those organizations, really the safety and soundness components are what are going to apply to them. The remainder of the guidelines regarding investment permissibility is going to be, of course, subject to their state jurisdiction. The group that it really doesn't apply to are privately insured, state-chartered credit unions, because they're, of course, outside the jurisdiction of the NCUA entirely.
Right.
So those are the groups that it will affect.
Okay.
Yep.
And so what's the significance of this? Why should credit unions who are affected by it, why should they be concerned?
Well, credit unions have had a lot of different information thrown at them with respect to these types of investments, how they can be used, how they can be structured, what the rules are for them or the lack of rules, and having to figure out or make up rules along the way in terms of how they're applied. And so this gives us some really clear guidelines in terms of what the NCUA is looking at in terms of risk management, and exposure. And the three real bullet points I would leave a credit union with are, number one, do your homework. It goes without saying, or you would hope it would go without saying, but quite frankly, do your pre-purchase due diligence. Make sure you understand the risks you're getting into. Look at the examiner's seven risks and follow those and devolve those. And then once you purchase such an investment, make sure you continue to monitor it relative to those risks. Keep an updated file, keep an updated review of the investments. And of course, always don't just use the vendor's information that's been promulgated to you. Go out and do a little bit of your own homework as well. Absolutely. So that's number one, is really do your homework. Number two is what I'd call kind of the 25% guideline. So what's happened in the past, banks have a very firm restriction of 25% of capital as a ceiling for this type of investment. Credit unions haven't had any guidelines regarding that thus far. So this is the first real official word on that 25% guideline. And it's not a cap. It's not a limit. What it is, it's a barrier for enhanced due diligence by the examiner, enhanced examination. So if the credit union has exposure to these types of investments that exceed 25% of net worth as they report to the regulator, then they're going to need to be prepared to do an additional examination work or a deeper dive from an examination perspective, and really with an eye towards safety and soundness, risk management, undue concentration, etc. So that's the second piece, is this 25% number. The third is the 15% number. And 15% is a little bit harder and fast rule, if you would, or guideline that's come out from this bulletin. And what the NCUA or what the examiner's guide has stated is really that a concentration in a single creditor or single obligor is what they call it.
Obligor.
A single obligor.
A distant cousin of Eeyore.
Eeyore, exactly. So obligor. But if you have more than 15% of net worth concentrated in a single risk, in a single credit, that is excessive, and you need to take steps to reduce or mitigate that risk. There's some outlying other, ins and outs regarding that, but specifically it's really that 15% limit is pretty much a hard limit, according to the examination guide, for exposure to a single credit risk or a single type of risk. And so you want to really make sure that you're diversifying your risks accordingly and that you're addressing those effectively.
Okay. Very cool. So what step? I mean, I think you just talked about the steps.
Nope.
You just answered my next question, John.
Sorry, Mike.
That's how good you are.
Don't mean to jump ahead.
Let's go to the next one. What if there's a disagreement between the credit union and the local examining authority? What happens there?
Yep. So we saw the bulletin came out. We had a conference call with folks at the NCOA to say, okay, can we get some questions answered regarding different nuances with respect to these guidelines? And they were very open to the idea that, you know what, this is a relatively new endeavor in terms of this scope of examination. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're going to have a dialogue. So what they've indicated is if you see that you might be in the gray area on any of these concepts or points, the 15% concentration, et cetera, reach out to your examiner, have a dialogue to begin with, maybe bring in the vendor to add additional subject matter expertise and be able to navigate that because they're not necessarily going to set forth more guidance from the NCOA directly or more explanation from the NCOA. Mm-hmm. They really want to see what comes out of the field from examination as issues and then elevate those key issues and address those in that mechanism versus trying to push forth just more words into the breeze, if you would.
So
really have that ongoing dialogue, be proactive, bring in the vendor resources as appropriate, and then reach out to the examiner and make sure that you're addressing these things before they become an issue or a finding on an examination, of course.
I have a question coming from left field here, because I'm so far removed from being an examiner. I mean, in that situation, I mean, are they easy to work with? I mean, are they open to options and things like that, and especially in a case like this? I mean, maybe I'm going down a rabbit hole that I'm not prepared for, but seeing how open they are to work with and that type, and especially in a case like this.
It depends.
It depends? Okay.
It always depends. If the credit union is very well capitalized, very clean operation, very straightforward
in
terms of their pronouncement,
the
examiner is not going to be concerned immediately in a knee-jerk fashion with respect to this type of risk. They're going to probably allow for work through much more effectively than you might otherwise. If a credit union's teetering on prompt corrective action, or they've got other mitigating risks that are facing the organization, and the examiner starting to say, well, could this be an impact to the share insurance fund? Could it be an impact elsewhere? They might have a different treatment from the examiner. Our view is, you know, we understand the bulletin. We understand, not the bulletin, but we understand the update to the examiner guide. So let's look at your situation in the context of the examiner guide, see if there's any gray areas or any issues that are flashing yellow lights or even red lights, and then let's have a plan to mitigate those issues prior to you getting into an examination. And if need be, let's share that with the examining authority beforehand. And if we need to go higher up in the NCOA to get to, you know, the drafter of the guidelines, we can do that and really kind of whittle down what is the true risk here and how are we working to mitigate that.
Okay, it sounds like it depends on how proactive you are.
Absolutely.
And then your history as well. Okay, very
absolutely
cool.
Correct.
All right, John, anything else to kind of wrap up here? Also, where can we find out more information on this?
You can absolutely go to our website, www.meyerchatfield.com.
Okay.
Of course, as always, you can always go to the NCOA's website. They've got a decent amount of information out there, and the examiner's guide is now published online, in addition to which we're available on LinkedIn as well, as I think everybody else is. Or feel free to give us a call directly, and we'd be happy to sit down with you or your board and work through, okay, what does your situation look like? And we can do that, you know, in a consulting engagement or whatever works for the credit union in terms of trying to make sure everybody's on the same playing field.
Indeed.
That's what we want to be.
Absolutely.
Keep those momentum rolling.
Absolutely.
John, thank you so much.
Mike, thank you.
Well done.
Appreciate it.
Keep up the good work, all right?
All right.